Hello and welcome to the How They Did It Business Podcast, where we share stories from the best in business. I'm your host, Ali Taylor, the founder of Diverse VC. Today, we have Ulrich Musset, the founder of wealth container platform, Vauban. It lets you set up and deploy complex legal entities, such as funds and SPVs, in hours with a few clicks. Vauban is lowering the barriers by removing the absurd costs and complexity of creating and maintaining wealth containers through the rapid automatic legal documentation generation and the live maintenance of registers. Ulrich, super excited to have you on the podcast today. How are you doing?
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, Alex. It's a pleasure. I love what you guys are doing. And yeah, really, just really excited having this discussion with you.
I know, me too. And by the way, listeners, Ulrich is up at midnight right now. So honestly, huge shout out for making this podcast. The international aspect of recording is super challenging. So just wanted to say, you know, show Ulrich a ton of love over here. But with that said, I would love to hop right into the famous fire round, ask you a couple of fun questions. Are you ready?
Of course, let's do it.
Awesome. So I love talking about books because I think it says a lot about a person. Do you happen to have a book that you like to gift to people the most? And why do you choose to gift that book to people?
You know, it's actually my my favorite interview question as well. So for this one, I'm missing a few data points, like to really, you know, like rank the books I've given the most as gifts. But the books I really, really like. So as fiction, I would say it's Brave New World by, you know, Aldous Huxley. Like I find this book just so accurate and relevant, you know, compared to, say, like 1984. And I kind of regret it's not more popular than this one, because I think, a pleasant dystopia is way more plausible than a very, you know, strict one. It's also the book that made me want to write fiction, like that made me want to write my first novel a couple of years ago. So I gave it a try, but after 60 pages and a summer spent in this project, I just realized I really sucked at writing. So I kind of put that project on the back burner. Second book I really love, more like nonfiction, is Bad Blood. So, you know, this story about the Theranos scandal, that, you know, it was this startup that wanted to disrupt blood analysis, but eventually collapsed. And yes, the reason why I really like this book and that I recommend it a lot is that it really shows the limit of the fake it until you make it, you know, mantra in the startup community. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, like everything in life, really, you should not push it to the extreme. And in software, you know, like you can break things, right? It's right, and no one will get harmed. But in healthcare or like other regulated industries, when you play with someone's life or money, you need to make sure your product is robust, right? You can't really you can't really fake it when you play with someone's life. So I think it's really important to read that book to keep that in mind, that, you know, fake it until you make it, it's great, but you should not push it to the extreme. Like you need to strike the kind of the right balance. And finally, last book I would really recommend is Wisdom of Insecurity by Alan Watts. Yeah, the message is so simple. Like it may sound very, you know, stupid, but it's basically to embrace insecurity. You know, like everyone tried to search for stability in their life. Mm-hmm. But what Alan says is that it actually creates anxiety about the future, but that when you start to embrace insecurity, you start living a very fulfilling life. And so that can sound very cliche, actually, but it's the most like impactful spiritual books I've ever read. And
you know what's really interesting about that? I think the idea of running toward your fear is something that a lot of people were scared to do by nature. Like you don't run toward the enemy by definition. Like nobody wants to potentially go in what I guess fundamentally, to make it simple, is harm's way. But by going toward the things that you fear, that, you know, fundamentally it's not like a gun, right? Mm. It's like it's something that you are, you know, a little bit nervous to do, for example, right? Whether that be, you know, building your business, X, Y, and Z different method or different experience for a said person, But by going toward that, you're building your kind of, I guess, capacity to be able to deal with situations where you're uncomfortable, right? And by doing that over time, you're going to get more comfortable doing things that you're not used to doing, or you're going to build skill sets that you don't typically have. And I think that book says a lot, or at least kind of from what I'm hearing, is a really interesting take on kind of that. I'd love to definitely read that book and check it out.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you think about it, I mean, it depends on the situation, of course. Like, you know, there is insecurity and insecurity, mm-hmm. but... You know, yes, starting a business, it's a limited, you know, you start a limited company, right?
So, yeah, so an LLC.
You don't really risk your life, right? So mm-hmm. it's just to go out of its comfort zone, but it's not life threatening. So you may address do it.
I love that. Listeners, check out those books. We're going to be putting together a couple of different blog posts, actually, with some of the top books from some of the guests we have. And Ulrich, we'll definitely make sure to get those on there if anybody wants to find them. So I want to move forward, and I like to talk about habits or some kind of absurd things. I think we all have them. I always refer to one of our previous guests, Luke. He told me he liked to have a bagel with, I think it was peanut butter and like cheddar cheese on it. I always thought that was the funniest thing that like he said was an absurd, unusual habit that people might believe to be one, right? But for you, do you happen to have an absurd habit or anything like that?
So I don't think it's that unusual, but I wear the exact same outfit every day of the week, like including the weekend. So I'm dressed like exactly like that. And it's actually a big relief not having to think about, you know, what to wear when you get up. So I remember when I was at uni, like I was really, really looking forward to professional life when I will be able mm-hmm. to wear the exact same thing every day, because obviously if you do that at uni, you know, people will judge you. But when you are at work, you know, you can come with the exact same white shirt like every day, mm-hmm. and people will find it completely normal. So it just reduces the number of decisions you have to make. It's like Barack Obama and it's Caesar salad or something that he had like at every lunch. Mm-hmm. So for lunch, I prefer to vary, but for clothes, yeah.
You know, it's kind of funny. It reminds me a little bit of Elizabeth Holmes with how she always wore the black turtleneck. And I think it was a primarily black outfit, but I'm completely with you. Mm-hmm. You know, diet has been something I've actually personally changed a lot. Mm-hmm. And I've found a lot of consistency in, hey, you know, let's just say oatmeal, eggs, and then, you know, salad for lunch mm-hmm. and then chicken vegetables for dinner or something like that. And not having to think about, okay, what kind of dinner am I going to make? It takes you away from, I guess, ruminating in your mind or just, you know, thinking. Rather, it makes you be more focused. Hey, I got this to do, then I can move on to the next thing, and makes you a lot more efficient throughout the day. And also, you know, it's a solid fit that you got going on there. So no complaints. I love it.
Yeah, thank you. Like, but it's exactly when you scroll like for dinner on this like food delivery app and mm-hmm. and you just lose 30 minutes just to make up your mind on on the dinner. So yeah, it actually helped to focus.
It's very, very cool. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about beliefs and behaviors. I feel like a lot of people have different beliefs and behaviors, kind of like how we're talking right now with the like the clothing methodologies or ways to basically reduce the amount of time that you have to spend thinking about other things because you have a lot going on. Do you happen to have like a belief or a behavior or something like that stuck out to you and it has really improved your life?
Yeah, I mean, five months ago, I started tracking my time, you know, on a mm-hmm. hourly basis. So how much time I spend reading, exercising, walking, and when I walk, like how much time I spend on each task. Mm-hmm. And it's been a really good experience overall, because, you know, before starting a task, like you have to ask yourself, do I really want to do that? Like, is it really important for me to spend 1 hour on this? And then when you look back after each month and you look back at the data, you realize that, for example, if you didn't feel very inspired this month, maybe because you only spend 2 hours reading this month, right? And that mm-hmm. if you would have spent more, but actually like given birth to more, you know, great ideas, etc. And so you can rebalance that for next month where you will say like, oh, this week I need to allocate more of my time on reading because actually I enjoy reading, so I need to do more. So it has been, it has been a pretty good experience.
Very interesting. You know, I think that reminds me a lot of just the idea of understanding your own habits, right? I think it's when I'm an iPhone guy, sorry, Android users, love you too. But, you know, as an iPhone person, you know, when they came out with the release of tracking how many hours you spend on various apps, you know, from, you know, social media to browsing apps, et cetera, you actually saw, holy crap, like I spent 30 minutes a day on Instagram or something like that, versus some people might be spending like 5 hours a day. And once you see that, you're able to reflect and say, okay, I'd actually like to adjust and tweak and be a little bit more aware of my time. And it has a huge impact, once again, on being more efficient and being able to allocate time to the things that you want to do, because it truly is the most important resource that we have. It's a very interesting point that you made there. Now, I want to keep moving the ball forward and talk a little bit more about saying no. We have a ton of different things going on in our lives. And you know, I think part of that is just having a priority system, like we just talked about, with the habits of just knowing what you're spending time on. But what else, or you know, how have you become better at saying no to distractions, invitations to things, et cetera?
So yeah, I think you just mentioned it, like talking about screen time and Instagram and, you know, all these social networks. It's very, very, you know, time consuming. So the only distraction I can think, yeah, it's really screen time, where I say, you know, no to intense scrolling, basically, you know, when Apple introduced these features, you know, yeah, that allow you to track your time. It was interesting to see the real data, because if you had asked me how much time I think I spend on my phone before this feature, I would have just answered, you know, just, you know, 1 hour a day, not, you know, not more. And I would, yeah, I would have underestimated it by a lot. But when you see the, you know, the real data at the end of the week, and you're like, I spent, you know, 20 hours on my phone, and what I could have done with this, you know, additional 20 hours. So I think that was a really, yeah, helpful features from Apple or from Android.
Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense. Very, very interesting. Now, I want to talk about, you know, when you had this kind of defining moment, because, you know, you had all this, these different things going on in the world, and you have a background at AXA, and you're doing a lot of financial backgrounds. And then you kind of decided, hey, I want to create my own business. Out of curiosity, was there like a specific moment where you're like, oh man, this is when and why I want to create this business? And what was that defining moment for you?
I wouldn't say I had a defining moment. Like, all was done pretty gradually. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I was 12, like I used my parents' computer a lot. So browsing internet, going to forums, learning how to use Photoshop, how to code, etc. Like, was very, yeah, very curious about internet in general. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I met a guy online that had a maritime company, and he wanted a logo, which I designed for him. So that's how I sent my first like €100 invoice for a logo. And mm-hmm. the beauty of internet, right, is that he would have never thought I was, you know, a 12 years old freelancer behind its parent computer. Yeah, and from there, I just moved to, I just developed like a website, and then a bigger one, and work on a larger project. So it was done very gradually.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So just over time, just different entrepreneurial steps, and you build to where you are today.
Absolutely.
Very interesting. And part of building, you know, up to where you are today, you face a lot of different failures. And like, I fail all the time, whether it be showing up to a meeting late, or, you know, it happens to the best of us because meetings run over, or, you know, you have a set list of 10 things you're trying to knock out, and you get, you know, halfway there because some of them took longer, but you learn lessons along the way. Do you happen to have any failures personally that stood out to you and helped you develop into the person you are today? Anything stand out?
I mean, yeah, I've got a lot of them, absolutely. Like, I think the thing is that they were not like big slaps, you know, in the face. It was more mm-hmm. like slow agony, where, you know, you work on a project for a long... I think it's actually better than a big slap. I don't know. But, you know, it's like when you work on a project for a long time and you realize, you know, it's not going anywhere. So this process of realization that you are heading in the wrong direction, it's not as painful as an immediate failure and as a, you know, as a big slap in the face. Mm-hmm. I remember there was this time where we work on this project with my current co-founder, actually. So that was a fashion app, like a kind of like Tinder for fashion, where you could swipe through different clothes. And, you know, we were not the first target client, obviously, mm-hmm. because like we were the least fashionable people of the uni, like, you know, dressing exactly with the same outfit, etc. And we spent like 6 months in a cave working on the product. I mean, not in a physical cave, right? But like more like head down, not talking to any, you know, potential users, just working on the product and building the product. And then we launched. And when we launched, it wasn't a great success, right? But it's normal because we were not the targets. We didn't talk to any potential customers. So there was, you know, little chance
validation.
That this project will go somewhere at some point. And now when I talk about that, it sounds very obvious, right? That you need to talk to your customers. But back in the day, you know, there wasn't all of this podcast you are doing about entrepreneurship and all these resources, you know, you can find online. Mm-hmm. So it was just, you know, trial and error, and the objective was to make as many mistakes as possible in the least amount of time. So on your next project, you would do less. Mm-hmm. But now there is plenty of resources online, and it's actually way easier to avoid dumb mistakes.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. You know, it reminds me a lot of when I started building my first company, the lean startup methodology. Right? It's where you come up with like an MVP, like the most bare minimum stuff, like idea, right? The fundamental idea. And you start talking to people and people who would be potential customers and seeing if they have any interest in this. Is this something you'd actually be willing to pay for? Let's set up a meeting, right? You don't have to actually have anything built out. And, you know, kind of the thing you can also do is say, hey, you know, we have a whole bunch of meetings set up for the next month, but let's throw some time on the books for a month later. Now you have 1 month to push out as much as you can to catch up. But it kind of sounds somewhat similar in the opposite experience of like, hey, we had to test and do things, but I think some of the best lessons are learned from seeing, oh, okay, we should have done this, or, oh, we at least were taking series of actions to now be able to look back and take that and move forward. So that's a very interesting kind of set of experiences, and I think that we all have.
No, and there are plenty, you know, of mistakes you can easily avoid, like fighting, you know, for a name with your co-founder for like 3 months, or fighting on a logo or on a design, you know, things
that you'll probably change it later anyway.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Things that really, you know, it doesn't matter, right? Like what does the logo look like? You just need to get started to your potential clients and do it.
No, absolutely. And that execution phase is very challenging for people because you want to have this. It's almost like, I think people who want to do like YouTube channels or be a social media influencer, they want to create this perfect concept, right? It's almost like an artboard of what they want it to do, what kind of brands they want to work with, what kind of looks they want to have. But they're spending all this time and they never put up a single video, or they never put up a single picture, which is the execution of what they're trying to accomplish. Instead, they just spend all this time ruminating and thinking of how we want to do it, what we want to do. But the important part is actually getting it out there and starting to engage with people, liking other people's comments or whatever that may be, you know, trying to make partnerships with people. So everybody gets caught in the ideation phase, which is important, don't get me wrong, but the execution phase helps out even more because then you start to see what works, what doesn't work as well. Very interesting. Now, I want to shift gears into our final question and talk about, you know, being overwhelmed and being unfocused. I think it's something that it happens all the time when you have 1,000 things going on, or, you know, you get a little bit burnt out some days and you're like, okay, I'm just going to pop up my phone for 5 minutes, and you look up and it's been, you know, 15 minutes. You're like, oh crap, I have to get ready for this next meeting that I have going on. We've all been there. How do you, when you lose focus or you're feeling a little overwhelmed, how do you bring yourself back and get back in focus to be able to start tackling whatever's in front of you?
The thing is that when you are in a growth phase, your default state is to be overwhelmed, right? Because there are, you know, dozen things you have to do, 100 things you want to do, and million things you could do. So there are, you know, plenty of options in front of you, and that's very overwhelming. So I think you need to accept that there may be fires and that chaos, you know, is part of the journey. Mm-hmm. So sometimes is when you kind of lose focus, you just need to let it burn. Like, you know, you just need to forget about all this project, etc., and refocus on something that you find is really important. And I think that it's way more efficient to sometimes just let it burn rather than spending, you know, your whole week trying to firefight, you know, a bit everywhere on a lot of different projects, but not making any progress from a global perspective. sometimes, yes, the right solution is just to let it burn and not overthink it.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting perspective you have there. With that said, listeners, that is all we have for this fire round with Ulrich Musset. We're now going to be popping into a deeper dive where we learn more about his business, Vauban, as well as what it's like to be a founder and CEO of a company. Tune in for part two, where we take a deeper dive.